May it please the court. Your Honors, Percy Edward Moore was convicted in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois, Western Division of 3 counts of distribution of a controlled substance. We are here today to ask you to vacate those convictions and to enter a finding of not guilty on each count, or, in the alternative, to remand the matter back to Judge Reinhardt's chambers for a new trial to be held in this matter. Mr. Moore has a, in the words of the government's own psychiatrist, a lifelong history of mental illness. For the 9 years previous to the trial in question, he was on Social Security disability because of mental illness. During the trial, we sought to introduce, to confirm his testimony of his understanding of the coded language, and I'll explain why that's important, the fact of the records from the Social Security Administration that would confirm the fact that he had been on full disability for the previous 9 years. The government in this case had to prove that Mr. Moore knowingly and intentionally did distribute a controlled substance. As part of their proof in this matter, the government stated that the audio tape recordings of Mr. Moore and one other individual who was a paid confidential informant utilized by the government utilized the coded language. No, sir. We are not claiming in any way, shape, or form that Mr. Moore was legally insane, nor are we claiming that he was utilizing diminished capacity. We are claiming that the... Yes, I did, Your Honor. In this matter, the confidential informant was present. None of the audio tapes, were there any of the words such as cocaine or any of the so-called street words for that, whether you use crack or rock or anything of that nature. The conversations that occurred either on or about our thrift shop, in which the confidential informant was also present, and there were many things for sale. Mr. Moore's prior mental history included 4 attempted suicide attempts, as well as incarceration, and went back at least to 1991. These records that we sought to introduce were in the possession of the United States government, the Social Security Administration. Mr. Moore had signed the release, and we had told Judge Reinhardt we were trying to get them. The government never produced the records to us prior to trial. Yes, sir. We had a signed release. It's not in the record, Judge, but basically they hadn't... Pardon me? Their response is not... didn't go outside, I'm sorry. They were trying to get them for us. They're looking. The response from the Social Security was, we're looking for them. And we eventually did get them, but that was after trial had been concluded. They had been mentioned, as the government's brief so ably points out, 3 times. On August 22nd, which was the final pretrial, and during trial itself, and we still did not have the records. We're complaining of, Your Honor, that the decision of Judge Reinhardt not to allow these records into evidence. Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. The way he ruled was, he said we could ask verbal questions about Mr. Moore's intelligence, of his intelligence, or of his understanding of the use of the words, but that we could not use. Of course, we did not make an offer of proof because the government hadn't given us the records yet. We were still waiting for these records. They were in the... I didn't have them. I didn't make an official, but I did inform the Judge Reinhardt on more than one occasion that this is the purpose we would be using these records for. I believe I stated it on August 22nd at the final pretrial and on one of the days of trial, which I believe is August 28th, but I'm not sure about that exact date. So the fact that these records were never produced by the government to us precluded us from making an official formal evidentiary offer of proof because I didn't have the documents to show. The record does not show the exact date, but my memory is approximately 60 days, Judge. And the government was aware of Mr. Moore's mental health problems, as well as specifically his Social Security disability. That was mentioned before Magistrate Judge P. Michael Mahoney on March 5th, 2003. The transcript shows that. I believe it's talked about on page 12, line 17, in which the magistrate noted that he had been on disability for mental illness for the previous 9 years. So the fact that these records existed could not have come as a surprise to the government because they were revealed within 1 week of him being arrested. The question goes into the general intelligence and the question of the defendant's ability to understand these coded language. Do the records specifically talk about the drug culture? No, they do not. But they do talk about his ability to discuss with the interviewer and why the Social Security classified him as fully mentally disabled, resulting in a nine-year payment on disability matters. Furthermore, Your Honor, the reason it's so important is that when these transactions came down, there never was a police officer who saw any of the transactions. They were not kept on videotape, the alleged transactions. The fingerprints of Mr. Moore do not appear on any of these documents. The reason I mention this is because of the fact that it stresses the importance of the conversations between this one paid confidential informant and Mr. Moore, and how, because that was their direct evidence that he made the sale. The sale was not caught on audio tape, nor was the sale caught on videotape, nor was it ever witnessed. He did say he did this, but Judge, you must remember, he's working in a thrift shop at that stuff. Well, that was a question that should have been presented to the jury as to the issue. If he understood, based on his mental illness, I'm not sure. Yes, sir, he did say that. He did say he understand. Well, he understood something of what the question was being asked of him. There was eventually a competency hearing held, as is reflected in the briefs, after the trial had been conducted because of Mr. Moore's problems while in custody, claiming that he had talked to the angel of death, and that caused the court to grant a motion for competency. We would ask that we'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, and I'd ask you to consider the other matters raised in the brief. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. We'll hear now from Mr. Hammond.
Good morning, Your Honor. Judge Sykes, I think you're exactly right. First and foremost, these documents, these Social Security Administration documents, were never produced in this case. In fact, defense counsel stated on at least two occasions that he had never received them by and during the time of trial. And although he raised the documents and said that these documents might show that his client had a mental disability, the district court never stated that these documents would be precluded if they were in fact presented at trial. The judge instead reserved the issue and wanted to see how the documents would be presented, what questions would be asked of the defendant. And the judge was very clear about that on three different occasions, the last of which was at the end of the first day of trial when the prosecuting attorney, the assistant United States attorney, asked defense counsel if these documents existed and if he could see them because he had not yet obtained the documents from defense counsel, at which point the defendant's counsel stated, in essence, well, I don't have them yet, but it doesn't matter because the court has said they're not relevant. And the court actually stepped in and said, that's not what I've said. I said I'd wait to see what would happen. It was the same response that Judge Reinhold gave on the three different occasions that this arose. Even if one were to see these documents, We don't know what they would say. They're not part of the record. The only argument that's been... I'm sorry? I have not, Your Honor. They are not part of... No. They have never, as far as I know, they have never been presented to the Assistant United States Attorney that prosecuted this case. They have never been presented to me as the attorney handling this appeal. And I would say that if I tell you to actually obtain the documents, if I tell you to actually ever seek to admit the documents, this argument has been waived. To the extent that defense counsel is arguing that somehow the government as a whole prevented his client from obtaining these documents and thus presenting them to the court, I would only note that the defendant never asked the court for a continuance on this issue. It was raised, I think, for the first time at the final pretrial conference. The government had never heard of this issue prior to that, but at that point in time, the defense attorney never asked for continuance. He never asked the assistance of the court to obtain these documents. If these documents were to exist, I think you're right once again. I cannot see how they would be relevant, how they would have been admissible. So if the court, if one were to assume that the district court had somehow precluded their admission by stating that, in fact, the defendant couldn't present a diminished capacity defense, which the defendant says he's not seeking to was not seeking to present at trial, or because they were not going to be admissible because the district court said I would not allow an expert, which I believe, once again, the defendant's attorney said he was not seeking to admit an expert. I cannot see under a plain error review, which is the appropriate standard of review, I think, for this issue, how these documents would somehow, how the defendant is prejudiced by the preclusion of these documents. There was no error here, and there's no way that the defendant was somehow precluded from presenting the defense that he's described, that he did not understand the conversations in which he was a participant. The defendant could have taken the stand. He could have made that argument. He chose not to. And there was a government expert that spoke to the nature of language used by participants in drug transactions. There was no cross-examination on this issue. There was no questioning of this issue. It just wasn't made at the district court. Finally, that is correct. The last two, the first transaction was not audio taped. There were also multiple conversations, telephone conversations, through a period of late September, early October, where all those conversations were also recorded and presented to the jury. Finally, the defendant seems to be making an argument, talking about these Social Security Administration documents, also about his competency to be sentenced. I will only state that although there is evidence in the record that the defendant had issues of mental health, the judge in this case ordered a psychiatric evaluation. The judge held a competency hearing. He made findings on the fact, crediting certain witnesses, not crediting other witnesses, and determined that the defendant was competent to be sentenced. And I don't think there's been any argument raised by the defendant in his brief or here today, except to maybe state that he disagrees with that determination, that was somehow clearly erroneous. And unless the panel has any other questions, I'll leave the rest of my time. I just respectfully request that this court affirm the convictions from the district court below. Thank you.
Your Honor, just briefly in response to the comments made by the Honorable Assistant U.S. Attorney, the record will show that the Social Security documents were eventually received and were turned over to the government for use at the time he was sent to the Butner, North Carolina Federal Medical Facility. So when he went in for a psychiatric, they received the copies were given to the U.S. Marshal's Office and transmitted to the Butner for their review as part of his treatment program. Furthermore, Your Honor, the testimony by the defendant, he did not testify in this case. As it was shown by the record, he has a prior conviction approximately 10 years ago for second-degree murder at a state court in Winnebago County, Illinois. And without the records to confirm the mental health disability of the defendant, the defendant's testimony was not an effective presentation, could not have been an effective presentation to the jury, and that's why he was not able to establish the same records as if he had been able to testify directly. And that's all the comments I have. Because, Your Honor, I used the release form from the local Social Security office, signed by the defendant, Mr. Moore, to obtain them, and I didn't think there was a need to get them. And by the time I got up to trial, no, I did not. That is correct. What I'm saying, Judge, is the release was given to them in plenty of time, and they never responded to after the trial was over. That is correct. They did not. On hindsight, perhaps it would have been a follow-up move, but we relied upon the representation of the office to get the records, and they were not produced in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Mr. Phillips, you served by appointment of the court, I understand.
That is correct.
You have a deep thanks to the court for having taken this assignment and for your efforts on behalf of the client. Indeed, our thanks to Ball Counsel in the case. The case will be taken under advisement. Thank you.